We're starting Teddy's Zion and Aleph from the top. We discussed about the woman's ability to sell property for mezonos or sell property for ksuvah. So I want to know, ketzad mocheret, how did she sell? And then how do we go about doing these sales? So I'm Rabbi Daniel by Rav Katina, I'm a Rav Huna, mocheret achat l'shnei masar chodesh. She sells enough to cover her expenses for the next 12 months. She does take a bulk sale to cover for the next 12 months. But she only gets paid out every month, which is it's an interesting setup here. So she sells the property to the buyer, and then the buyer pays her installments, monthly installments, over the 12 months. So that she doesn't take all the money, except that she goes, each month she gets the money, because in case she gets remarried during that period of time, then she'll have to return the residual. So instead of having to go get the money out of her and the residual, what they do is they allow her the monthly allowance, and then if she remarries in between, or there's a reason that she shouldn't get mezonot, right, then they'll just let the rest of the residual money go into the estate or to the assomim. So they cut it. They allow that money to be paid out on a monthly basis.
Are we sure it's protected the assomim, or just because we're afraid she'll spend all at once and she'll have nothing
left
the rest?
Right. Rashi says it's a shimtin asir, right. Yachzir mashbiyad al yorshim. Sounds like it's a protection for the yorshim, but I hear the issue that maybe we want to make sure.
Budget.
Right, it comes down to the same thing, though, because, and let's say she does spend it all.
Right.
So she sells more, which is taking money away from the yorshim.
I think, the interesting thing is that why are they forcing her to sell? Why did she sell 12 months in advance? So one, I think, is you don't want to be mitarach so many times to sell, but also from the value of the property, meaning that if she's selling enough in little parcels, right, it's not going to be worth so much. So here we sell it off in blocks so that she gets the real value of the property. But the truth is she's not really entitled to, we don't want to give all that money up front, okay, because it's not really, we're really supposed to be feeding her. Mezonos is a daily activity or a slower activity than a 12 months in advance activity. But I can hear you that the 12 months, that maybe we're trying to even budget for her helper, not have all this money. All right. It says you only have to sell, we sell 6 months in advance. And that she still gets it on a monthly installment plan, but yet it's still done only for 6 month blocks rather than 12 month blocks. I just say it's interesting here that the buyer comes into it a huge advantage here. I mean, basically he's getting an interest free loan, basically, and paying out in installments over the 12 month period. He's not paying upfront for the property. So it turns out, just even because we're structuring it this way, that the buyer ends up advantaged, even though it has nothing to do with him at all, the whole takana. Right? Tanya kavasi the Rav Huna. We have a brisa that goes like Rav Huna. Mechar l'shneimasar chodesh lokeach mifarnesa achat l'shloshim yom. Right? Tanya kavasi the Rav Yehuda. We have a brisa that goes like Rav Yehuda. Mechar l'shishah chodeshim lokeach mifarnesa achat l'shloshim yom. So whether it's 6 months or 12 months, we have a brisa supporting each of their positions. Amar Meimar Hilchasa Mocher L'Shisha Chadashim Lokeach Mefarnes Achat L'Shloshim Yom. So the locha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that we go every 6 months, we sell out in 6 month blocks, and she gets financed monthly from the buyer. So Amar Rav Ashi LaMeimar the Rav Huna Mai. So he says, what are you going to do about Rav Huna? Rav Huna says 12 months. So what are you going to do with that opinion? I didn't hear of this Rav Huna. Klamar, though severely, not that he didn't hear it, but basically that he doesn't hold of Rav Huna's opinion, rather only of Rav Yehuda's opinion.
Why does the Gemara have to give us a definition of Loshim
Yelim? I mean, not to think that he didn't know about the other opinion, meaning that he gave his psak in the face of the other opinion.
But we've had Loshim Yelim many times in the Gemara, so we know what Loshim Yelim means. Why is it all of a sudden like Gemara?
Gemara's not necessarily... Gemara in many places assumes you know something, and in many places doesn't know where you're starting. I mean, the Gemara is not necessarily a sequential item, so it's not so. You can't always say that we know it beforehand. All right.
Some people just started Daf Yomi Ksuvos.
I mean, Abraham Sheshes. So that's Abraham Sheshes. Mocheret lemezonot, ma'u shetachzor v'titrof l'ksuba. Right? So if she sells for mezonos, can she go back and be torif l'ksuba? So whatever, right, exactly. So she now sold property. That property, what has a lien on it? What lien is it? Is her chov for her ksuba. So she goes in and sells it to the buyer, and then she comes back 6 months later and says, you know what, I want to collect my ksuba, let me have the property back. because she can go mitoreif from them because she has a previous lien that exists on it. Can she do such a thing? This is the question, or like Rav Yosef. Dam Rav Yosef, Amalos, or the Zavin Achrayusayatme, that when a widow sells property, right, Achrayus, with recourse, the recourse goes on the Yisomim. Well, Beidina, the Zavin Achrayus, Yatme. And when Beisdin sells on behalf of the estate, the Achrayus, the recourse is on the Yisomim. Meaning that when they're both, when both the widow and the Beis Din are acting, they're acting really as agents of the estate or agents of the yorshim. So when they sell those items with recourse, the recourse isn't to them, to Beis Din, and the recourse is not to the widow, but rather to the estate or to the yisomim. So my kaven d'achrayas de'yatmei tarfo, since the recourse goes back to the yisomim, right? Therefore, what when she goes and toreif the property back, that's because she's really, right, taking the achrayus now goes back. Now the buyer has a recourse. He's going to go back to the yisomim, not back to her. So it's really two different people. I mean, she sold property to them, but really as an agent of the yisomim. Now when she comes to collect property, she's coming as a personal collection. It's for her own ksuba, not as a function of the estate. So they're really two separate transactions here. Oh, demomatzi amri lo, nehi de achrayus de alma lo kabit aleich. All right, ilaveich. All right, when you said that I have recourse, right, only goes to the Yusomim, meaning that she is, right, devolving herself of the responsibility to pay back the money or take the recourse, that's only true when it comes to what? Third parties coming and grabbing the property. But you yourself, if you yourself come in and take the property, you can't say, you know, all of a sudden that there's no recourse to you. I mean, that you can grab, that you're willing to be considered a third party here. So that's it. You know, we had a similar item before when we had that exclusion of Achrayus. Does the exclusion of Arayus mean, Achrayus. The exclusion of Achrayus, what does that mean? Does that mean that when I release you, you know, from all third party claims, or I say, well, my mother releases you, but that doesn't release me? Or do you say, because you're acting as the agent, the automatic assumption is that you are also not included in that release, right? And even though here, what she can claim, one possibility, she claims I'm an agent of the Yisomim, and then I'm coming as my own claimant, so they're two separate transactions, and therefore I should not have any, that the FI shouldn't have application to me. Or do we say, when you act as an agent, the buyer, underlying buyer, assuming not only are you an agent, but even on your personal level, you're not going to make such a claim because you're functioning as, in a sense, as two people, as an agent and for yourself. In that sense, that if there's recourse, you can't go. We're going to say that you can't go back and get it. So that'll be the same issue as us, right? Over here, when she goes back to be toreif, the property she sold for mizonos, was she acting like Rav Yosef? Was she acting like an agent of the estate to provide or procure mizonos for herself? And therefore she can go be tori for a ksuba from this item. Or do we say, no, when she acted as to sell the mizonos, she was acting both as an agent, but also on her behalf, and therefore she can't go back and grab the property because that would be considered, right, inappropriate because she said there's recourse. And that she knew that basic something of saying there is recourse means I'm not going to come and take this property from you. Alright, so now the Gemara says, we learned a mission about this. Mocheret v'holechet ad kedei ksubasa. She can go and sell until, meaning that she's allowed to sell the estate property to feed her mizonos until there is the amount of her ksuba left in it. And then why does she leave over enough to collect her ksuba from? So that she can collect her ksuba. So shmamina, shayirayin, lo shayirlo. I mean, the whole point of leaving over that excess at the end is so that she can collect her ksuba. I mean, the assumption is she can't go back to the buyers and collect her ksuba out of those buyers. So Mara says, well, why do you have to say that? Dilma eitz tova kamashkalan. Right? Maybe the mission is giving good advice. What the lo dikra la hadrin isa? That she shouldn't be considered a, bad business.
A reneger.
A bad deal maker. We don't want her to go and then sell and then just be pulling it back out of the buyers. I mean, technically she could do such a thing, but the advice is leave at least some stuff over your ksuba so you don't run into that problem. Imkain, someone says, well, if that's the case, litnei gova ksuba, so I'm in a shock. Then he should just say she takes her ksuba from the rest. If it was an Eitzah Tovah. My samachla. Why does it say afterwards in the Mishnah? It says what? Holecha zayka take ksuba. So if it's samachla, she takes back ksuba. So that's what she's going to rely on to take her ksuba. That extra lesson from Minah, Shaira in, Lo Shaira Lo. Meaning that that is where her ksuba is coming from. That there is no other place she can get her ksuba from. And therefore, the conclusion would be that she cannot go back to Lekuchos to get her ksuba out. So now we have a question. Zavin velo itzrichu le'zuze. So this is an interesting, very, very interesting case. That he's selling property. This is any case. Someone's selling property because they need the underlying money. Okay, so now he had something to buy or some sort of business transaction that he was depending on the money to use. And then what happens? Lo yistrich le'zuze. They didn't need it. The deal fell through. Something happened that he doesn't need the money. So he's selling his land for money to use that money for some specific purposes. So now, hadri zavine, olo hadri zavine. Are you allowed to reverse the transaction or not reverse the transaction? It's clear, at least to me, it seems obvious, Tosfos writes it, but that if you look at the Tosfos right across from where we are in the Gemara, zavine, it's drich leizuze, gon shgila dato b'shasa mecha. That it's got to be an explicit, not t'nai in the sale, but it's got to be a obvious that he's selling the property for that money to do this transaction. I mean that the buyer knows that the reason that he's taking this money is to do this other transaction, and that he has to make an assumption, or it has to be olal adas, that if the transaction fails, that maybe he doesn't want this deal to happen. That the deal is almost, even though it's not an explicit tanai, it's almost as if he's placing a tanai in the sale. Right? It's somewhat like a shchiv meira. It's equivalent, I would say, not exactly, but I'd say like a shchiv meira, when you have him giving out commands, right, and he sells out, he gives away all his property. And then he gets up and he's a bari again. He survives. I mean, he doesn't die. Right? So there we say that all the transactions reverse. Because even though he didn't state it explicitly, it was clear the reason he's giving away his property is because he's on his deathbed. Right? So too, if a person's coming and says, look, I got this, there's this great deal on the whatever, and I want to buy, so I'm selling the property to get this deal. So then, that's as if he's saying that, well, if this deal falls through, you know, we should be able to reverse it.
Some people feel worse.
What?
I'm saying some people feel worse because, you know, it's not true, right?
What?
I'm saying some people feel worse.
So glad to see you're up and about.
It's a full kinyan and everything's been made. And it's
it's a regular transaction.
It wasn't a full kinyan.
Yeah, it's a full transaction.
There is an idea of going back on one's word.
Right, that's true. Right. There is a general right, Mishaparo. Which we say. Right, that a person has to stand by his word. But that's the end. Right, there is no tonight. But it's an implicit tonight, so he's not going back on his word. That's the point here.
The Kenyan is wrong on the Mishapara. If you could undo the Kenyan, you could definitely, the Amparo probably.
Well, Mishapara is not, because sometimes when there's a failure in the Kenyan, we still say Mishapara.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole idea with buying with money and buying with things that don't make a proper Kenyan, but the person's assuming that the transaction took place, and that's where we invoke Mishapara.
Right, but it kills him.
Right, so then the Kenyan wouldn't work. I mean, that's the whole idea, that there wasn't a transaction. So that's the Gemara is asking the question. I'm not saying that's one conclusion. I'm trying to tell you the side, that why you would think to reverse it. I mean, that's the Gemara's question. Can you reverse the transaction or not? Is this implicit tonight sufficient to allow him to reverse the transaction? Or we say, no, he didn't explicitly make that tonight. Since he didn't explicitly make the tonight, there's a transaction. Transaction's a transaction. Tashma, thou gaver the zovin arvel of a couple. Some person sold property to a papa. It's strictly zuze the mizban torah that he but was going to buy a ox. He saw some, he got this very good ox, and that he wanted to get his hands on, and therefore he sold his property for this ox. So Floyd strictly. So then in the end he didn't need the money because the transaction fell through. The ox wasn't available, or somebody paid more. Hadri niyale papa lari, and papa returned the property to him. So what do you see? You see that. Right, the implicit tonight that you can reverse in such a case. Gemara says now, how do you know that?
A good guy.
Right, exactly. Rav Papa, was a good guy. He was, he was being nice to the guy. He realized that he sold for this reason, and that he didn't have to do it, so he went Lifnei Mishu Sedin. So we can't prove anything from it. All
right. Because Rav Papa was very wealthy, right?
Yes.
So, he's more in a position to do something like that. Now, it's someone that maybe needs the money more.
Either way, that's what I'm saying, right? You don't have conclusive evidence from what Rav Papa did, because Rav Papa was acting by the din.
We're saying that Rav Papa probably bought the ox.
Tashma. All right, now the next proof is, this next proof is difficult. I'll try to work through it. There's Rashi and Tosfos on this, how to learn this next proof of the Gemara, but it's an interesting case just in general. Tashma, how b'tzurta d'hava b'nehardah? There was a famine that came to Nehardah. Now, this means the famine was that all of a sudden, the prices shot up on certain items, that it became, there was a frenzy about certain items. So they were food, in this case it was food, and that there was the panic that there was going to be no more wheat. They were out of wheat, and all of a sudden the prices started to elevate, you know, to extremes. So people went ahead, and what they do, right, so they sold their houses, basically. They sold their estates. They sold their summer estates to buy wheat, meaning that the wheat became the commodity of choice. Right, this is right. So they had of course they were selling everything to buy wheat, meaning that wheat became more valuable than cash and than land because of the pricing. The pricing was going up so much. So right, thank God we've been through a couple of these in our lifetime. But you see such thing where certain items become more valuable than cash itself. I mean that you have these panics, you have these frenzies where. Bubbles, exactly, where items become more valuable than cash, and people are willing to forego cash or forego what would otherwise be secure properties or transactions in order to buy these items, to be a participant in the bubble, to feel like they're not either missing out or because they're afraid if they don't, right, then they won't have, that everything else is devalued relative to the item that's in the bubble. So that's it. So now they sold all their properties, and in the end they got a delivery. It showed up, the delivery of wheat showed up, and all of a sudden the prices are plummeting. So now, it says, that everybody can get their properties back, they can reverse the transactions. Why? Because the transactions, what, were premised on the fact that there was no wheat available, that the prices... Right, even though not explicit, although here you have to at least, again, I think here, maybe the Gilui Das, I mean, in the other transaction we said it has to be explicitly stated, at least that there's a Gilui Das of what they're buying here. Here maybe it was an obvious Gilui Das. The fact that everybody was selling to do this mean that was obvious why they were selling the property. So, some smart guy.
I believe it was the wheat merchant.
Exactly. I said the guy who had the wheat in the first place was selling it because the property.
There's a reason why he couldn't make the delivery.
Somebody's collecting properties. Got no time to deliver wheat.
Here's the guy with the right. It's the famous story of during the Civil War. During the Civil War, the Confederates printed money. Right, and then they lost the Civil War, and obviously the backing of the Confederate government was worthless, so all the money was worthless. So there was one entrepreneur who hired the fastest steamship in the world, right, after the war was lost, and he shipped all the money to England and sold the Confederate money before the news came that the war was over. So you want to know who bought all the houses? The guy who knew that the wheat was coming, he bought all the houses. He sold futures in wheat, knowing that the delivery was about to show up.
It didn't work.
Right. Well, that's because he went back. But here it's an interesting case, and that's why it makes it very difficult. So Rav Nachman, who we said again is a dayan, right? Rav Nachman's a big dayan here. Right. So Dino the Hadri Apadne the Marayu, that it should go back. So now the Gemara seems to say, well, this will be a proof to our case above, that when you have some sort of implicit deny, that you reverse the transaction. The Gemara says, no, Hasam Name Zvini Betos Havi. Dig, right? There was an underlying mistake in the transaction. Why? Digle Milsa the Arba Bakule Havakaimu. So what? There was a problem. There was floods. There were major floods on the river, and therefore the boats weren't able to proceed directly to the ports, and they came in a roundabout way. But in the end, the boats were there. Meaning that at the time of the sale, the boats were already there, the wheat was in the port. And if the wheat's in the port, then... Well, if the wheat's already there, then there was an underlying mistake in the transaction. The transaction was premised on a false proposition. Whereas when you have the zvune, when they're going to buy ashore, now there, at the time of the sale, he still thinks he has the ability to buy the shore. It's only later on that we determine what? That he can't make the transaction, and therefore he wants to go back. So that may be right. So that might be the same case. But over here, assuming that the failure in the transaction had to happen after the sale. So over here, this case, that's what the Gemara is saying. This case is different because this case has an underlying mistake or underlying mistaken premise in the sale. Whereas
the value of wheat actually really was much lower, or because there was wheat there?
Well, both. The value of wheat should have come down already, because the wheat was already there. I mean, that they're both. It's meaning that their sale was because there was no wheat available, but the wheat was available. They just didn't know. Right? Which is like that story I was saying, like the Confederates. Like, he's selling this stuff because they should be able to reverse the transaction because the war was already over, right? The war was over, just he had sent it. He sent it early, so they should be able to reverse that such a transaction. Obviously, it didn't happen, but reverse such a transaction.
A little bit of a difference, because if you transacted the wrong value, then you could say it's like a
mechatos, right?
And therefore it could be reversed. But if the reason is simply because, like we were saying earlier, that the person bought it at the sold it at the time because they had a need that they, you know, I mean, it's, I think it's a different thing.
I think the Gemara's point in this case is that the two are synonymous, whereas in our case they're not synonymous.
They were mistaken about the need.
Right. I mean, it's because they're mistaken about the need, but the fact that they're mistaken about the need also means the price is lower. The price is wrong, meaning that the two are hand in hand. If the wheat is available, the premise is mistaken and the price of the wheat is wrong. In our case, you can separate the two, which is that at the time of the sale, right, the premise was there. But the mistake doesn't happen until later, which is that that failure of that transaction only happens later on, not at the time of the transaction. So that's the differentiation that Gemara is making, is when is the information available, you know, could have been available to the buyer. And I think that's the difference here. And that either way, the mistake is because the information is technically available, or the item is technically available, and therefore there's a mistake. Whether it's because of the price, whether it's because they knew, either way, they didn't want to sell because of those. That would have changed their whole decision at that point in time. It's the equivalent of Nedarim, right? I would say, Hataras Nedarim, right? Hataras Nedarim is not, we're not Matir Mechadosh, meaning that you're not allowed to take, if you take a Neder and you want to come to the Chacham to be Matir the Neder, if something new comes up, right, you can't be Oker the Neder. The only way you're Oker the Neder is what if you find a Petach, which means that if you had known at the time of the Neder that it was a mistake, then it's a Neder Betol. So in that sense, that you can be Oker the Neder Mi Karo. So you can't use new. So I think the same thing here. What if the boat's already there, if the wheat's already in the port, stuff is, so then it's not Mechadosh, meaning that the item and the information was available at the time of the sale, and therefore you can be Oker the sale. Whereas in our case, right, it's Mechadosh, meaning that there's a new event took place after the sale, and that's what he's trying, Lemafreya, to retroactively to reverse the transaction. So that's the differentiation of the Gemara.
The boat in the port, is that mamish? I mean, the boat's in the route. I mean, is it mamish because the boat is physically here, or it's anything that would have impacted the price? Let's say if the boat was half an hour away.
Right, I assume both. I mean, that the point is that it's close enough that the sale was already on a false premise. Right.
It must be that at a certain point they actually believed that they wouldn't have enough food to sustain them.
Right.
And now that changed.
Right. That's what changed the bubble, right? I mean, that there was a famine. They thought there was a famine. And meantime, it wasn't a famine. It was that the river was flooded, and so the boats were taking a circuitous route and getting there later than they thought. So deliveries were being delayed, not because there was a famine, but because there was a problem in the
flooding.
Delivery route.
So this was only true if here it wasn't the fault of the wheat merchants that they were late. There was flooding, natural.
Right.
What happens if it was their fault? What happens if there were no floods and that and they delayed?
Right.
In order to raise the prices, or
no, it could be for anything.
Well,
it just
sure.
They were late. They
right.
were late having the ships leave from where the wheat is collected. Does it still work the same way?
Well, anything that's not because of a famine. I mean, right? The whole premise of the sales here is that there's a famine. Anything that's the delay is caused by some other external.
So it's the famine that's causing it, not.
Right, if it's a famine, if there really is a famine, then they can't reverse the transaction because that's what they sold for. They sold based on that.
Right.
If there's any other reason, and meaning that the items show up, and then it's clear that there was a mistaken premise in the famine, that the famine was the assumption, then you can reverse the transaction, assuming that at the point of the sale there was some underlying mistake in the premise, right? That there being a famine was a mistake.
And
and it's in question would be, let's say a ship of corn came.
Well, that's right. Rashi. Rashi points that out.
Right.
Rashi says at the end of Rashi that it's only in this case. He said, it wasn't a mistake. You go and close by a mockery. They just changed their minds. Oh, Shabo Chitim Imokom Acher. different wheat came, like corn or corn.
Sure, red wheat instead of
red. Then we'll make it become a low hydrate, and it doesn't go back.
Well, chitim and makom achar is a problem of chadash, meaning that it's not the problem with chitim and makom achar is that the mistake wasn't that the shipping delays were there, meaning that the wheat's really not coming from that other place. It's coming now. They find new sources, right? So new sources. That's not fair because then their assumption was right at the time, and then it becomes back like our hadri zvine case. Then it's like our case of machadash. Right. So now the Gemara says iachi. This is a hard line in the Gemara to understand. Iachi. I know darma le Rabbi Shmuel the Rabbi Nachman. This is when the Rabbi Rabbi Shmuel said to Rav Nachman, "Im kein, im tzeis makshin l'atid lava," which is the great, right, the great question. In the future, they will never be able to sell property in these types of situations, because if you say that you can reverse, there will be no buyers. Next time you show up, why would anybody buy property? I mean, it's not to their advantage to buy property anymore, because they're taking the risk of buying the property. So then, if things turn out to be that things aren't bad, they're going to lose the property. If things turn out to be good, then they get the property, meaning that they're always on the losing end of this transaction. So why are you as a buyer going to go in and buy property in these situations? Meaning that there's no advantage to you buying in these properties because you always have the lower hand in buying these properties. So he says, why would you do such a thing and do a reversal? Because maybe even if it's true that you should reverse it, you're almost from a Takanas Ashuk point, you're going to destroy the ability to sell in the future. So why would you do that? He goes, this is unusual circumstances. That's like the famines every day. Famines happen once in a blue moon. Meaning, so that it's not something where you're going to have to worry about the buyers not showing up. Right?
This is what Nachman responds.
Responding to Rami Bar Shmuel. Right, that is correct. So then Rami Bar Shmuel answers him in Betzurta Benarda Mishkach Shchicha. That is, Nadal, these types of situations or famines were a regular occurrence. All right, so now the question is, why did the Gemara assume Hainu de Amre? This is exactly what Rabbi Shmuel said to Rav Nachman. Why is that a proof that the case by Nadal is that the boat's docked over here? I mean, what's the proof here? So Rashi says, if you look at Rashi, we'll just do it quickly, look at Rashi. Rashi, the last Rashi before the Mishnah. Since this is common, then we worry about boats coming and showing up. Shmamina, time of Mishum Mekach Toz Habi. Must be that the case over here is what? Because of a mistaken transaction. Diba atu chitim in makom karov. If it was because chitim showed up from another close place, o shabo le'elu levadam, or came to these people themselves, meaning that these guys, the land buyers, had a different source of wheat, and they were able to get wheat. The time of Mishum Zovin Veloiz Truchle Zuze Hava, right? Midah Delo Shchiachu Veleka Michshol. All right. So then there would have been no question. So Rashi says the fact that Rav Nachman says back to him that it's Mishkach Shchicha must be a case of what
the boat.
Rami Shmuel says back to him that it's Mishkach Shchiach by Ben Arda must be a case that the boats are coming and docking, meaning that the boats got delayed for some reason and they're showing up. Because if it's a case of that they got another source of wheat all of a sudden, or that these certain buyers only had the wheat and nobody else had wheat, right? Those are unusual circumstances. And therefore, he couldn't have answered up Mishkach Shkiach. Couldn't answer up that's the common practice. And that's the proof that Rami Vashmo and Rav Nachman were discussing the same type of case, that it must be that it was an underlying mistake in the transaction. That's where Rashi learns it. Right, because that's an unusual circumstance where you'd have the wheat show up somewhere else, you find a different source, all of a sudden the prices drop. So Tosus asks the question, which is, why is that a proof? You look down at Tosus, but Kasha the page is there, it's 2, 4, 5 lines from the bottom. 5 lines from the bottom, first word on the line there. Kasha the page is there. The my hochkohi, what type of proof is this? I will say to you, that whenever you have a mistaken assumption in your sale, meaning that then you can return it, umiyu, kosher and hecho dava bekule, and certainly in a case where the boats show up, kedemuchach shmeita, daz havi mechach tos yoter. Therefore, it's a bigger mistake. Vimkein shaper kamar. Therefore, when he says to him, nimseis makshin latid ho bechol inyan hadres vine, because in every case you reverse transactions. So in every case you transactions, then you're going to cause a problem in the future. So then the answer is Mishkach Shchiach. You're right. These are normal cases, so people are aware and know to watch out for them, know that they could reverse in these cases. So they say, Hilchach Nirek Moshe Perish Rashbam. Says, I like the Rashbam's Peshat better. The Yachi Kushyuhu. It's a question. Ho'il, the Amar, the High Hadras Vine, Dafko Mishum, the Bakuli, Havei Kaime. Heikin kamar butzurta benardo amishkach shkiach. Alov zos butzurta de arbe bakuli habikami. Right. So now he says this. It's a question. Since you said what that hadres vine dafka mishum de kuli habu. The only reason that you reversed the transaction here is because the boats were delayed. The boat deliveries were delayed. Heikin kamar butzurta benardo amishkach shkiach. Right? How could you say that this is a betzurta that famines are common in Narada?
This is a special case.
Hello, zo betzurta darbe bekuli avikami. This is a unique case because the famine came because of the boats coming around. So pshita lo shkiach hava. It's certainly not a shkiach case. Uvish lama bishdinrina zavin lo tzrifle zutze hadre zvine hainu vada de shkicha. Right? If you say in general what that the conclusion of our gemara is what. That zavin v'loitz strictly zuzay that goes back. Then vade shchicha the rope hamalim betzurta because they always had betzurtas. V'nechle the tefizet the paskin and hilchos lefi pshitas habaya. Right. So that's the question. The question is not the way Rashi learns is that this case has nothing. Almost in a sense, this little memra of Rav Nachman and Rami Bar Shmuel has nothing to do with our bigger question. What's our bigger question? That when you make a sale with an implicit tznai in there, does it get versed or not? No. Their statement is just a proof that the case in Narda is about this boat issue, right? That it's a mechaftos, because that's a mishkach shkiach case, and that's only what happened by these famines or that the boats get delayed. That's a common thing. That's what Rashi says. Tosa says, no, this is dealing with our bigger question. What's our bigger question over here? Bigger question over here is whether you can reverse transactions or not. And that's his point. The point is that if in general you hold that you can reverse transactions with implicit tanoim, then the answer of Rami Bar Shmuel makes sense of Shmishkach Shchicha. That it's common that there are betzurtas, that there are what? There are famines in Narda, because this is a regular occurrence where people have implicit tanoim in them, and therefore a reversal here would be like any other case that you had where you had some sort of implicit tanai in the transaction. And that would be a common practice. But if you believe that you can't reverse when there's an implicit tanai, and this was a unique case in Narda, that they reversed it because of the delay of the boats, then how can you say Mishkach Shkiach? How could you say such a thing? So that's what the Gemara's conclusion is. What? Mishkach Shkicha. That's what Rami Bar Shmuel's conclusion is. Yes. That the reversal of implicit tanais is what? Is the halacha. And since that's halacha, such types of reversals are common practice. And therefore the buyers know about them and it won't ruin the takanas hashuk. It won't be a problem. And therefore the next line in the Gemara is behilchaso zavim letzirklei zuzei hadrei zvine. That's how the Gemara concludes. That's what Tosa says. That's how the Gemara is concluding. How do you get to hilchaso over here? You get to hilchaso because that's exactly what Rami Bar Shmuel answered Rav Nachman. That it's mishkach shkicha. That's the common practice. The common practice is that there are reversals with implicit tanayim. And therefore, right, that's hilchaso. Whereas with Rashi, it's not clear what this last line in the Gemara. This last line of the Gemara is almost like dangling. You know, the Gemara talked about the case of Narada, says that's not a proof. And then the Gemara just comes up and has a conclusion that the halacha is that you can't reverse it.
So how do you read, Amar Le'yatu Kol Yom Betzurta Shchicha? What's the kasha there?
So Rav Nachman, do you really believe, is the halacha really that you can reverse transactions with implicit tanoim? And therefore it would not be a, what? It would not be a Shchiach case.
It says, Imken, no, but before that, Rami Bar Shmuel says, Imken, Imtet Machshin Lazid Laba.
Right. So Rami Bar Shmuel says, Larach Machman, you're going to cause a problem in the future.
Then,
Amalei, Atoko Yomar, Betzurta Shchicha, he says this is an unusual circumstance. We don't have these. These aren't normal cases of reversals. Right? So then he says, Amalei, in Betzurta Benardar, Mishka Shchicha, that reversals and implicit tanoim, right, are common practices. And therefore, you are going to cause a problem in the future because nobody's going to be willing to buy in cases of Betzorta because they're going to know it's going to reverse.
So if that's right. The case, then we'd say that shouldn't be the halacha that's...
Because the halacha is that implicit tanaim reverse, then in cases of Betzorta, you're going to run into problems. That's what he's saying. Uh-huh. I mean, he's saying that because the halacha is such, then people are not, by Betzortas, they're going to say that they're not going to willing to buy in this case because they know their transaction is going to be reversed, right? So they're not going to be willing to step up and buy. And you need, that's exactly what you need. In famines, you need buyers to step up. I mean, that's a key to creating liquidity in markets, is that there are buyers who are willing to step up in difficult situations. Here's a difficult situation. Everyone's trying to sell property, and they need wheat. So there are buyers standing up. But if you say that they know that the takana in general, mishka shchicha, that what? That there are such reversals, they're not going to be willing to step up in these difficult situations.
I mean, they're not losing anything. If it gets reversed, they get their money back.
Yeah, but why take the risk then? Meaning that there's
what
I own all the property.
But if you don't own the property, you get your money back.
Yeah, but he thinks he's buying property on the cheap because right, he's investing his money here to get the property, which he thinks there's a fire sale of property. Because you make an investment. Meantime, he could have bought something else. He could have done something else.
Right,
with
but
his money.
The only get back his money. If it goes up, he'll have to return it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no upside for him.
I mean, is this supposed to be connected to the previous case of the Amana where she's taking the kasuba when she's already sold it? She's taking the property. I mean, is there supposed to be?
Yeah. I think
that's a much more serious case because she's already taken the first amount of money, sold the value from the property,
right.
Used it from his honor, whatever, and now that she's taking the property back.
Well, the Gemara doesn't connect the cases. Although I'm assuming that from a flow standpoint, that there is a connection here, that she's trying to mean that there she's going to be called a Hadronaisa. She's not really, the Gemara doesn't consider a reversal, but she's going to be called a Hadronaisa. Then the Gemara asks the question, can you reverse when there's an implicit tonight? The Gemara asks a separate question, independent of that case. The Gemara wants to know in general, can you make such reversals of transactions?
I don't see how the final statement of the Gemara, though, it makes it more likely that transactions are going to be voided. So if the concern beforehand was that if we allow it to be reversed in the case of the Bitzaret,
right.
Then the people aren't going to step up and buy. Now we're saying it's even broader. It's even any time that the money is not really needed afterwards, you know, in the original intention of the sale, you can then go and reverse the sale.
No, so that's what Rav Nachman's statement. Rav Nachman's statement is that, you know, it's not common, and therefore people will step up. But then Rami Bashmul comes back and says, no, it is common because this is a regular occurrence in the shuk that people won't stand up, and it will be a problem. According to Rami Shmuel, you do have a problem.
He's just recognizing that there is a problem.
Yes.
He's not saying that the halacha should be otherwise because that will cause a problem.
Right, but he's just pointing out that this is an issue now because if you reverse in this case, you're going to cause a problem. Meaning that he's saying to Rav Nachman, even though the halacha might be hadrei zvinei in general, maybe in this case don't allow a reversal of transactions because you're going to cause a future issue. All right, so let's go on. We're just going to finish up here. All right, Almanot. Ben min erusim, ben min erusim. So you have a widow from Arusa or from Nisua. All right, Mocheret Shelo BeBeisdin. They can sell in outside of Beisdin. What they're selling or for what they're selling, we'll discuss in the Gemara. All right, Rabbi Shimon Omer, min erusim, Mocheret Shelo BeBeisdin, a Nisua from a Almanot who's a Nisua, who was married, right, who had a full Nisuin. She can sell without Beisdin. Min erusim, lo mitkarel BeBeisdin. But in Arusa, who is right in Almano from being an Arusa, she cannot sell except in Beis Mishen La Mizonos. Why? Because an Arusa is not entitled to Mizonos. What she's selling for? She's only selling for her Ksuba. Right? So that's Beis Mishen La Mizonos. Kho Shein La Mizonos, Lotum Kelo Beisdin. Someone who doesn't have rights to get Mizonos can only go through Beisdin. Bish Loma Mine Sue Mishum Mizone. Why, according to the Tanakhama, can she sell outside of Beisdin because of Mizonos? I'm not going to be a Tarek for every time she needs Mizonos to go to the Beisdin and sell. I mean, that's just not low noyim, and it's not difficult. Avam Ela Mine Marusi my time. If you don't hold like Rav Shimon, why does an Aruso, who's a widow, not have to go to Beisdin to get her stuff sold? Meaning that she only has to go once to get her ksuba. So why wouldn't she go once to get her ksuba and that's it, be done? Right, Mizonos is a recurring issue, so we don't want her to go to Beis Din. So the Gemara says, Amar Ula Mishum China. It's because of Chain, right, the women. Now Chain, again, this is Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos everywhere. What is the Chain here? So if you look at Rashi, Mishum China, second line of Rashi, Shiu Baleim L'Chain Meineam. This is for the women's benefit, right, so they will be willing to get married. The women won't withhold getting married, knowing that what, in the back end, they might have to end up in court. Right, they don't want to be in this position where they end up in court, so they will, in order to prevent them having to go to court, that'll make it more appealing for them to get married, for the women to get married. Whereas Tosfos says what? If you look in the last line of the first Tosfos, Inami, the problem is the chain here is not the woman's benefit, but it's for the benefit of the woman in the sense that men will like her more. The chain here is that the men will find her more attractive. She bezui yoter min amana, right? That the idea here is what? The what's the chain, right? This tos, we had these toasts in Machlokas Tosfos and Rashi earlier, but what's the chain? Is the chain that the women will be willing to get married because now their husbands will find more favor in their eyes? Or is now they'll have the ability to, the men will find the women more attractive because of the chain. They have now, she'll have a ksuba, she'll get her money fast, she'll be able to get married quickly. Whatever it is, that's the question here. But again, is it Mishum? That's one possibility. Chino, and Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lefi Shein Adam Rotzeh Shetitvaze Ishto BeBeisdin. A person, when he gets married, doesn't want his wife to have to go to Beis Din, basically. She doesn't want to have to show up in Beis Din, and therefore he's willing to forfeit right, the need to go to Beis Din, or that she can sell the property herself to get her ksuba out here.
Minan Nisuin also the ksuba she could sell?
What?
Minan Nisuin is also the ksuba she could sell now in front of Beis Din, it's only the Mazonos.
Well, it sounds like both, right?
So that means even though, okay, right. Even though, it means once you let it go out of Beis Din, you let it go.
Right, it sounds like it.
Right.
Sounds, yes.
You can have
it. Right, we'll see in a second. See more. The Gemara is going to get more detailed about it. All right. Maybe now, what's the difference between these two positions? Igbenai Grusha. Right? Probably a divorcee. Laman Damer Mishum Chino Grusha Name Baye Chain. According to Grusha, still needs Chain. So according to Rashi, that means what? Even though when she's getting married, if she knows that she gets divorced, she's going to be in trouble, they won't get married because they want to know that whether they get divorced, whether they're widowed, they're always in a good position. According to Tosis, I think it reads a little easier, isn't that a grusha nami needs chayin, that's what Ratos was talking about, that a grusha wants to get remarried, she's even worse off than an almano, right? A grusha is a worse position than an almano, and therefore she needs even more chayin, right? Lamanda amar lefi she'ein adam osi shtaza ishto, but based on grusha loichpet le, he doesn't care, he's divorced the wife. The fact is that there was animosity already, he's divorcing her, so if he's divorcing her, he doesn't really care about her being this baza bebezdin. It's not. A grusha lo timkor elele bebezdin. Right, a grusha cannot sell except in Beis Din. Bishlam adam arafin shein adam rosh shetav az ishto in Beis Din. Right, grusha lo yichpet lei. Laman adam mishum chinah grusha nami bayichein. Why would the Mishnah conclude that a grusha has to go to the Dafka Beis Din? It shouldn't be. Gemara says, Hamani Rabbi Shimon. He the author of that Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon because Rabbi Shimon said what? That and erusa. Right, they doesn't have this issue. Right, the list of chena, the gabi almana, min erusin, nami mishum the ksuba, kam mizavna, v'amalotim kol be'beis din. Right, he says that an erusa that wants to go get her ksuba has to go to Beis Din. So certainly a grusha is going to have to go to Beis Din, according to Rabbi Shimon, because he doesn't worry about this Indian of chen. He doesn't worry about erusa at all. And he doesn't worry about erusa. If he doesn't worry about erusa, it's obvious that he doesn't hold of the chen issue. So where it says, Rabbi Shimon, atonale, right, reisha, bidan esurim, lo timkor. He already said that. Rabbi Shimon already made his explicit statement that what? That a right that you can only be in erusa can only be mocher in Beis Din. If erusa can only be mocher in Beis Din, then certainly a grusha. What do you have to come and tell me, grusha? So ma the tema amana min erusa modul nafish chen dido. Right? What if chen is engendered by what? So this sounds more like Rashi a little bit. What? How does chen is engendered by bio? That means that it has to be a conclusive marriage in order for this chen to settle in. You don't talk about chen until you have a conclusive marriage. The willingness of the woman to get married, not to have a rusin, but a willingness of the woman to have nisuin. That bia is what? Is premised on her knowing that her out is, she'll be safe in the back end. Right? But when it comes to a rusin, that's not somewhere where you need chayin, because, right, chayin is, there is simply a monetary transaction. She gets divorced from a rusin, right? She's still a psula, she's still, right, she maintains her status. Whereas after nisuin already, right, then she's a be'ula, she's changed the status. In order for her to acquiesce to that, she needs that chen, know that she's safe in the back end.
So grusha also needed.
Right, so therefore, right, aval grusha, the nafish chen dida, she is married, she had nisuin, right? Therefore she would need chen, according to Tosmin in the back end, she'll need chen, and according to Rashi in the front end, she'll need chen. Ema to buy chen. So therefore what? Therefore Rabbi Shimon had to say it both by an arusa and by a grusha. So ha, nami tanina, that we already know. Koshe in lamizonos. Right, that Rabbi Shimon says anybody who does not have mizonos does not collect outside of Beis Din. Who doesn't have mizonos? Lasuye mai, lav lasuye grusha. Right, because he explicitly already said erusa. So when he says the statement of anybody who doesn't have mizonos, who's he coming to include? Must be a grusha. Grusha is not entitled to mizonos. Lo, the Gemara says lasuye migureshet ve'eni migureshet. It's come to include a case where there's a suffek gerushin. What's that case? The Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Zera, Kochum, Moshem, Yuchu, Gureshet, Venom, Gureshet, Baal Chai, Bezono, Teha. Any place that what? That you have this suffek, Gerushin, the husband has to provide Mizonos. So since the husband would have to provide Mizonos.
Where the get landed? Right. Closer to him or closer
right,
to
yeah, him. Exactly. That's the suffek case. That's one of the suffek cases.
Why does she only in Basin?
What?
Why does she need to go into Basin in this case?
Because that's the point. That's why they come to exclude in this case, because she might not be married at all. Meaning that's the whole point. If she's not, it's a very difficult, it's an unusual circumstance. And number two is that she's not allowed to collect from the Soman. That's a big issue. That's actually why. But she's, when she's, Eno Magresh is Baal Chai B'Mizonotel, only her husband is Chai in her Mizonos. But once he dies, then she has no right to collect Mizonos from the Soman.
Right.
So that's why she has to go to Beis Din to get her Ksuba, because she's not entitled to Mizonos after his death.
So he's not talking about... It's not talking about the Mizonos when he's alive.
Right. Meaning that the whole point is that Baal Chai Mizonotel, meaning that what?
So
after he dies, she's not entitled to Mizonos.
Mizonos when he's alive, she's right. Like, she could go out of Beis Din, she's like Nesua?
Right.
Even
yeah.
if Reb Shimon?
Yeah, I don't, yeah, it sounds like it even goes to Reb Shimon that since she's chayav mizonot that you can collect, but the question is what's that? When her husband's away and she's trying to get mizonos?
Yeah,
right? Some, I guess she can make mochel without Beis Din, but she's going to have to get a shtar tirfut to do it, right? I don't know, it's going to be harder, but I think the point of the Gemara, the Gemara is focused on here, is that after his death, she's not entitled to mizonos, and that's what Reb Shimon came to say. Whenever she's not chayav mizonos, she doesn't get, she has to go to Beis Din. What's the case she doesn't have mizonos after death? That's a case of this safek gerushin, not a regular case of gerushin, but a safek case of gerushin, because she was entitled to mizonos up to a certain point, and then she lost that entitlement. That's what he's coming to exclude. All right? Tashma. Kishem shem mocharit shlo be-beis din, kach yorsheha, yorshek subasa, mochrim shlo be-beis din. So that, right? So just like she has an entitlement or right to sell out a set of beis din to get her ksuba, so too her inheritors have the same right to sell out a beis din to get the ksuba. According to one who says the whole problem is bizayon based in going to based in, right? Just like she doesn't go, we don't want her in based in, she doesn't want his kids in based in, her kids in based in. Meaning, what do we care about her inheritors? When he's getting married, what do they care? Now, this is especially for Tosis is probably even it works better. I mean, the whole idea of chayin is that after she has the ability to get remarried or she'll find chayin in other people's eyes, what does he care about the yorshim? The whole point is that she should feel that security, not the yorshim. According to Rashi, you could still say maybe when she gets married, she's thinking not only about herself but she thinks about her yorshim. But again, that would probably be more far fetched. Rashi says it's enough that she knows she's secure; she's not worried about a yorshim at the time of marriage. So Gemara says, "Yikatarg ma'ula, my chenika, targ ma'ula, kagon shir shota bito achuta." That there is such a case, right? There's a girl. She's going to worry about her daughter or her sister in these instances when they're inheriting. That they should have also this idea of chen. Again, this reads better like Tosfos. That they should have chen, meaning that they should have the ability to remarry quickly without these problems. Going to Rashi means that she has to upfront be thinking about this possibility of her, right, that she's willing to get married because she knows that her sister and her daughter will be taken care of. Or you say what? That her sister and daughter will remarry because they know that in the end it's easy to get the thing out. Meaning that the zakana is for her sister and her daughter, that they easily get their ksuba and they won't refrain from marrying because they see that it's so difficult in the back end. One of those, that's how you can explain Rashi. All right, next Mishnah. Machra ksubasa miksasa. So, Yossi, this was yesterday. We talked about this. This is the case. Machra ksubasa miksasa. Right, so she sells her ksuba or parts of it. Mashkino ksubasa or miksasa. She makes her ksuba into a mashkon or a portion of her ksuba. Not like ksubasa l'achar or miksasa. She gave away her ksuba to someone else as a present or a portion of it. Lom tking par ishar el abeisin. She's going to collect the residual ksuba, right, in what's the shar here. We'll say is, right, so since she already took part of it, then she doesn't get mizonos anymore.
This
one,
she's in control of the estate.
Right. And then Elam is a Beis Din. The Chachamim say she can't sell, even outside of Beis Din. So here, if you just look in Rashi, the first Rashi, here we say, Reb Shimon, the Kamar law, Damarim Mocheres, lo be Beis Din. This is Reb Shimon. The author of our first half of the Mishnah, which Gemara is going to ask in a second, is Reb Shimon. Lo Mocheres, Elam Mizonos. Right? She can only sell outside of Beis Din when she has Mizonos. Mizuz, Mikem, she govta Miksasa. Since she already collected a portion of Ksuba, in La Mizonos. She no longer has Mizonos. Vachim Mukala, Big Mark, Reb Shimon. That she can't sell. Why? Even from portions. She can sell in between for mizonos in Beis Din. So I don't know what Rashi's after here with the Chachamim. When she says that she can sell in between for mizonos, sounds like from the Chachamim, she's still entitled to mizonos even after she breaks a portion of her ksuba. According to Rashi, it sounds like she's out. Once she breaks a portion of ksuba, she's out of mizonos. So the Chachamim, it seems from Rashi, and I don't know if this is the way to read Rashi, when I noticed this Rashi, I said, oh my gosh, the Chachamim are saying that even if she sells a portion of ksuba, in between getting the rest of the ksuba, she can keep getting mizonos.
Yeah,
or,
I guess it should take $1.99. And...
Right, so I have to think of your problem. So, or you can explain Rashi saying what? That she's collecting on back mizonos. I mean, she's collecting. The way Rashi read our Gemara earlier on is, how does she collect? Can she collect on back mizonos? So here also, she can collect on back mizonos even after she's collected a portion of ksuba. Not that she's entitled to mizonos anymore, but she can collect on those mizonos from the past, right? Even though now she's not entitled to mizonos, but she can keep collecting on that mizonos.
So
right?
If she finished collecting also, then she can go collect the back.
Right, I mean that she's out of the picture, and now she has to go to Beis Din to get the back mizonos. Not that she can't collect it, but she'll have to go to Beis Din. Here, they're coming and entitled her to get from, right, in the partial of being in there. I don't know, but I thought, because we discussed it yesterday.
Over here, it's seems to me that according to the Chachamim,
she's
still entitled.
Right.
To the
Tzedakah, that's the simplest way to read Rashi. Right. That's the simplest way to read Rashi is that until it's paid off, you know, you can't. Then she can keep eating mezonos. And then what Yossi asked is a good question. She can have a ploy here. She'll collect a little bit of her ksuba. She'll lift over, and she'll have 98% of her ksuba, 99% of her ksuba, and she'll have mezonos. She'll have the best of both worlds in that situation. Right?
So that's what the Tosfos written is before.
Yeah, here's the Tosfos written.
Tosfos at the bottom.
Yeah.
It says before that she continues to collect.
Oh, mezonos. But why? Yeah, but I'm saying.
Anybody out of the group called subasol, makaris, mezonos, she'll offer mezonos herself.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the simplest reading of Rashi. My problem is then you have Yossi's problem, which is that then she can ploy to end up with most of her ksuba.
Oh, if
she starts collecting,
right.
Does she get all? Like, let's say
she gets a pro rata mezonos. I don't think so. That's
there's
not.
No connection that ksuba is one
right.
for one.
No, I don't think we say that because mezonos are something that's unlimited. That's what Gemara said above. In La Kitzvah, mezonos is one of those things.
Ksuba, so.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that. I don't think you do that. I'm not saying definitively, but I don't think that's the case.
Well, when you say in La Kitzvah, there's no way to do it.
Right.
Just
there's no way to
enlarge the amount of mezonos that you'd.
That's my point. You can't prorate it because ain't like Yitzvah means that there is no defined value of mezonos. Okay. All right. So now let's go. Machra ksubas mezonos mishkana. Okay. Lo timkar et the shalav bebezin chomer mocheret he afilu arba chamisha plumim. She can go 4 or 5 times, go in and sell it. Mocheret lemezonos shalav bebezin. And she can sell for a mezonos shalav bebezin. Ukotep lemezonos macharti. And she writes in the contract that this wasn't for my ksuba. This was for my mezonos. Grusha lo timkar lo bebezdin, right? And a grusha, this was the statement we quoted above, Rav Shimon, that was obvious, because the Gemara's going to say Rav Shimon's the author of this Mishnah, that a grusha does not collect except in bezdin. Masnisan mani, who's the author of our Mishnah? Rav Shimon, he, the Tanya, mocha ksubasa, mashkuna ksubasa, asta ksubasa putuki, right? If she sells her ksuba, or makes her ksuba into a mashkun, or she makes her ksuba a specific collection of right, a putuki lacha, in la mezonos. She no longer has mezonos. Rav Shimon omer, afa bishlo mocha, velo mashkuna ksubasa, ela machtisa, Abda mizonoter. Rav Shimon says not only when she sells the whole thing does she lose mizonos, even when she has a portion out, she loses mizonos. So that's obviously the Tana Kama of our Mishnah. The member of the Rav Shimon Sarvar Delo Amina Mixas Kesef Kokol Kesef. Does that mean that Rav Shimon holds that when you have a portion of something, it's not considered like you have the whole thing left? I mean, over here, just because she has a part of her ksuba still to collect, that doesn't entitle her to, like, as if she doesn't have her whole ksuba, and therefore she should be able to continue collecting mezonos.
You can say it absolutely.
I know. I thought so also. I thought so also. The Gemara reads it this way, right? Because you can look at mixas in both ways, right?
That part of your ksuba, yeah.
So we're going to see why. I mean, the Gemara is going the other way. Rabbanan Tzai, Rimin, mixas, kesef, kol kesef. The fact that she has a portion of her ksuba to collect as if she didn't collect her whole ksuba, and therefore she's still entitled to mezonos. We heard just the opposite from Mishima, the Tanya. Behu isha bibsula, right? That the Kohen Gadol has to take what? Isha bibsula. Prat with bogeret. He's not allowed to take a bogeret, which means a woman over the age of 12 and a half. Shekalu b'lasila se'a, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Lazar v'Rabbi Shimon machshirim b'bogeret. He can marry a bogeret. Azam b'karat. So there, what it sounds like from there, that what? Rabbi Shimon holds that you allow a bogeret. Now what's the problem with a bogeret? A bogeret is not a psula gemura. That's what Gemara believes, that when she a real psula, that's when she's a nara, right? When she's a ketana, she's obviously a psula, but when she's a nara, until she's still a full psula. Once she reaches the age of bogeres, the Gemara believes that there's a reduction in her psula cell. There's a natural reduction in psula cell. And when there's a natural reduction in psula cell, there's only what's called mixas psula cell. So what do you see? Is mixas psula sufficient or not? So we see if Rabbi Meir believes what mixas psula says is if now she's lost her psulos and she can no longer marry the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimo, who's the Rabbi Shimon over here, says what? That when there is a portion of psula left, it's if she's a full psula.
So
you say, you see, mixas psula says like kula psula. Also here, mixas ksuba. The fact that she has a right to collect a part of her ksuba, she made her mean she's if she didn't collect the whole ksuba and she made her collect mizonos. My answer's up. No, hasam b'karai p'ligay. That's a unique case. The case of Basulim is that they're darshaning the pasuk, and it's not about svara. It's not about a svara, but rather about a pasuk. Why? Rav Meir svar b'sula fila mixas b'sulim. If you had just written it, the pasuk says b'sula seha. Right. So if it had just written b'tula afila mixas b'sulim, right, then it would mean even if she had a portion of b'sulim. B'suleha, right, with the yod added in, at ika kula b'sulim. That teaches me she has to have full psulim. That means after the bogeres would not be entitled to marry. Bibsulotah. What do you do with the extra bet? The bibsulotah. Bikadarka in bishaklo kadarka lo. That's only if what? She lost her besulim, meaning that she literally lost her besulim. If she would have biyash lo kedarka, and therefore she did not lose her besulim, then she'd still be okay to marry the kohen gadol. That's the way Rabbi Meir learns the pesukim. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, sorry, besula shlema. When it says besula, right, this is their machlokas in the pesukim means what's the starting position? Is besula, right, the starting position mean besula, mean afilu mixas besulim? That's Rabbi Meir's starting position. Rabbi Shimon's starting position is besula means complete besula. Therefore, what? Vashma, therefore, besuleha, when you have the besuleha, afilu mixas besula, even a portion. I mean, that's why they allow a bogeres to marry a kohen gadol. And then what are they going to do? Bibsuleha? She had kol besuleha kayamim, that all her besulim will be remain. What does it mean, all her besulim remain? Ben kedarka, ben shelo kedarka. I mean, that she somehow had biyah, kishelo kedarka, even though her technically her besulim are still there, that's not considered a total besula. It's total besuloseha, means that she was never, ever had biyah. No matter how she had biyah, she never had biyah, and that's how they learned. So therefore, the machlokas of there is about the pesukim, how to darshan, what the starting premise in besula is. It's not about whether mixas is kukulo or not, it's about what your starting premise in besula. So therefore, you can't bring a proof from that Gemara over there to our Gemara or the Brisa over here, because this our Mishnah or these Brises over here are talking between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir, arguing about mixes kakula or not.